Welcome to the BOTUS podcast. I am Jacek from BOTUS, and today I am here with Dr. Massimo Frosecchi from Florence, from Italy. Thank you, Massimo, for being here. Thank you for taking the time. So Massimo, he's an implantologist from the beautiful city of Florence. He's got a private practice there. But not only that, he's also active in different international associations, national and international associations that we're going to talk about a little bit. So there is the ITI Study Club of Florence that he is the director of. There is the Giglio Association that we will talk about. And Massimo is also active as an international lecturer in different countries, especially in Brazil. So Massimo, you it sounds like you have a very busy life. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe in your own words?
Okay, thank you so much, Jacek. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you and people from BOTUS. Always a very precious collaboration for me. My life is normally very busy. Today is holiday in Italy, so it's the perfect moment to take a breath and even spend some time for this podcast. I share my daily life with my private office, my private practice here in Florence. And normally, before the lockdown, I travel a lot, because I spent some time in University of Genova. It is about 2 hours and a half from my city. And I teach there. I have a contract for implantology teaching. And normally in the last year of the graduation and for master courses. We work a lot with foreigners in our university. And this activity with foreigners is quite common to me, because even as ITI fellow, I have some activities around, study clubs in many different countries. When I go for other reason in the country, very often I give some lecture, or we share some knowledge in study clubs. And also another activity that Jacek mentioned was the Association of Continuing Education, Il Giglio. I found it around 20 years ago here in Florence to give a continuing education to the local dentists. So it's not only on implants or surgery, but basically for all different disciplines of dentistry. Everything that I'm talking about now, it was some months ago, because as you all know, Italy was very, very closed for more than 2 months. Now we started again everything, but we will start to move from one region to another only tomorrow. Yeah, so tomorrow is the big day that we will start to move in different parts of Italy.
Yeah, so maybe just as a hint to everybody who's listening to this podcast, we're recording this at the beginning of June 2020. So yeah, we are still within the COVID-19 pandemic, of course. So in many countries in Europe, there is still the lockdown. And you mentioned, Massimo, that in Italy, you are now in the process of reopening, right?
Yeah. I think I was very surprised in my office, because I thought that patients could be very scared to come, or even just for the economic situation that is quite tough. But as you all know, Italian people are a bit crazy. So people started to come back in the office like before. They start to do surgeries and prosto and everything without big problems. This surprised me a lot, because I thought that we could come back day after day, little by little, to the old style. But I think we are ready to restart. And this was a great news for me, for my office, for the staff, to have some enthusiasm from the people.
So that's great news that things are restarting again. Massimo, you touched upon it earlier a little bit. You're actually, the head of the Giglio Association in Florence. Can you tell us a little bit more about this, maybe? What exactly is it, and what's the objective of this association?
Yeah, When we started, it was very, very important, in my opinion, to provide for a local association in my region for continuing education and for credits of continuing education for general dentists. So the 20 years ago, basically all dentistry was 99% provided by general dentists, by general practitioners. So it was important to have an upgrade, a sort of update, some new techniques or something are coming to share with them, to provide for them, not to be a scientific association only in one field, but every month we provide for a good meeting with a very important speakers, sometimes very famous speakers, and the participants could pay a fee for the whole year. So everything was included in 1 year, and basically was enough for have a good continuing education and all the credits they need for the rules, no, to work. So I think it was at that time a very good idea, but after so many years, many things are changing, and I think general practitioners are not more the biggest part of dentists here. So we are studying now always to modify a little this kind of association, this kind of offering, like for example to switch to web meetings for many parts, to be more more economic, more cheap for the participants, to have a sort of cheaper fee for the participants, and to concentrate the Congress activity in one or two big events. So to choose, for example, surgery or prost or something in a very big Congress, very important Congress, and most of the other lectures to move to the web, because during this lockdown, most of dentists got familiar with web meeting, webinars, and this form that it was always considered the future. Now I think this future is come, no?
Is, yeah,
right. So why not? Because it's very cheap and you can record, you can have a sort of library of the previous meetings. So it can be something probably useful for general practitioners that are not so young. They want to spare some money. They want to stay at home. They don't want to move from other parts of Italy. So we can probably enlarge the number of participants, but in the web, and to do something more important live in big congresses.
Yeah, and indeed, I think it's a global phenomenon that more and more events and congresses are moving to the online world. So it's I think it's not only in Italy, also in Germany and in other countries we're seeing it. Yeah,
I think many things are changing in this field. I think in the future, in the next future, it will remain very big congresses or very hands-on courses, very specific courses. They will stay in the market. But many things that were in between, I think, became too expensive for the market. So why not to consider the webinar, the web meetings, or something similar that I consider to prepare not like lectures, but like tutorials, no? When you don't know what to do with your computer, you go in YouTube and you want the quick information. In 5 minutes, you want to solve your problem. I think the same have to be in dentistry. I want to provide for a sort of technique tutorials that participants can find a very good speaker, can learn something, is even very, very little thing, but in few minutes.
Massimo, talking about online activities, you, as already mentioned, are an ITI study club director in Florence. And if I understand correctly, you were the first one who moved an ITI study club meeting online. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was, in reality, it was not just my idea. Also, Marco Antonelli from Perugia had the same idea. I only prepared before, but it was something we decided to do in the worst moment of the epidemic situation, where we were all a little sad and a little worried, no? So I thought, what can I do to get close to my members, to my colleagues, my friends, no? In a different way. So we always thought that web was the future, no? So in that moment, in that sad moment, tough moment, why not to move to this future, no? To get close to our friends, to our colleagues. So Marco had the idea to use this platform. He teach me how to do. Uh-huh. And I started very fast. So I'm very happy. They told me that from Basel that my study club was the first in Europe. And this was, I think, a very good starting. But all the Italian section of ITI was talking about this possibility. So I think was not only my idea, it was only the starting point, I think, but it was a very good idea of the Italian section.
And how was it received by the clinicians? Did a lot of clinicians participate from the beginning? Or were
there? Yeah, it was fantastic. I think the energy was great because all people was living the same situation. This is not very common. Normally, we have very different lives, but during the lockdown, people stay at home with nothing to do, with only bad news from the TV. And so I think people received this possibility as something great, no? Something very interesting. Was a bit messy at the beginning because most of people leave the microphone switch on. And so we could hear the children and the phone rings and dogs and everything. So we spend a lot of time to ask people to switch off the microphone. This was the bad side. But even this humanity in the first ITI study club was nice, I think.
So you basically went, I think, through the same learning curve as we went through at BOTUS, at the company. It sounds very, very familiar, the microphone switching off, video switching off, etc. So, yeah.
Yeah. But what's great, the idea, because when you see that someone is coming in the meeting from another country or from south of Italy, north of Italy, all at the same time, we can discuss together. And at the end, we spent almost nothing to do it, no? This was something incredible because we understood that it was very, very effective and very efficient. So I think we don't have still the right idea how to prepare these meetings, but we will discover little by little. I think we have to look for another form, not the same of a lecture, something more flexible, more quick, that you can record, you can use only when you want, when you have the need. So something like a tutorial. As I said before, I think that is not the typical study club that we want to see the people, we want to talk to the people. It's something different, but at that time was a good idea.
I totally agree. It's highly efficient to do meetings like this online. Also for me, it saved a lot of traveling time in the last months. And it's really surprising how much time you can save with it. Yeah, Massimo, yeah, so we talked a little bit about the Giglio Association, about your activity as an ITI study club director, but you're also active at the University of Genoa, right?
Yeah, this, when they contacted me from Genoa for this, we call in Italy contract professor, is something that they renovate every 2 years. Is not something, I'm not an employed of the university, but they asked me to join the university for the implantology, for some lessons for the last year's students or for foreigners. This was a good idea. I appreciate it a lot, but the problem was that it's a bit far from my city. I could not leave my office for doing that. But I found a very, very nice team, very, very stimulating team, based on quality and enthusiasm. And so we found a way to make it possible, no? I only do lessons to the last year of graduation, so I don't have to go too often to the university. And especially I'm involved in international project. For example, I'm a co-director of Master of Implantology, and participants are from all over the world. In reality, we have no Italians. This is a funny part because, you know, nobody is prophet in his patria, we say in Italy. We have a lot of participants from Far East or from Arabic countries, from Gulf area, and from Egypt, from many, many different countries. And this is a very nice adventure. And another good side of working with universities is that we have collaboration in 19 different countries, especially from Far East, but even England or Indonesia, Malaysia, Egypt, India, China, and many others, 19. And we have this collaboration with local universities. So we do a sort of program that we call fellowship program. We organize program of 5 weeks normally, and we move from these countries and the participants come for the last meeting and ceremony in Genova. So they spend 1 week only in Genova. The other weeks we move to their countries.
Yeah, that sounds very impressive. I mean, quite a lot of work. But apart from your lecturing activity at university, in the past you've been also lecturing quite a lot of different congresses, in particular on the topic of immediacy. Is that correct?
Yeah, in implantology, in time, many topics are more or less interesting. You know, for example, when you want to speak about sinus lift, nobody wants to hear you because there are some techniques that probably some people are already well experienced on that. They don't need more knowledge. The technique is not changed very much in time. The typical example is sinus augmentation, for example. Other people are not interested to use this technique. So for other topics like immediacy, on the contrary, there's always a little bit enthusiasm on this topic because it's quite challenging even for practitioners that are quite experienced. It's a controversial topic because some speakers are completely contrary to this technique. They don't like this technique. They consider it too risky.
Let's dwell a little bit on this topic of immediacy. Can you maybe explain a little bit to us what exactly is it about? Maybe to somebody who hasn't been confronted yet with this topic. What is immediacy and where do you see the advantages?
Yeah, this term immediacy should mean that you can use the implants and immediately use a prosthodontic solution on that from the first day or from the previous days, from the very, very early moment of after the surgery. Normally we consider within 1 week, but in reality it's in the same day or maximum in 2-3 days. It doesn't mean in all times immediate loading. Sometimes is it media loading because loading is intentional, like for example in full arch solutions. In other cases, it's just for aesthetic or for soft tissue conditioning. So you try to exclude from loading this restoration, the temporary. You want just to have a temporary that is nice, that help the patient for the daily life, but is not dedicated to function. We call it immediate restoration.
Uh-huh. And when it comes to immediacy, do you still see the need to use biomaterials there?
Of course. I think biomaterials and immediacy, very rarely you can make immediacy without biomaterials. I think probably 99% of cases, because I don't like to say 100%. No, 100% is never in medicine. So I could say 99% of cases of immediacy, you need some biomaterial, because basically very, very beginners in implantology, they think sometimes that you can take out one tooth and you can fill the socket with one implant. But this never happens, because it's not what we want to achieve. We want basically to extract one tooth and place an implant exactly where we want for the prosthesis, not trying to fill the socket. So for this reason, very rarely the implant fills completely the socket. Sometimes is even not in the same position of the socket. So at the end of your intervention, you have one implant and you have an empty space and you have the bone walls. In some cases, you don't need to fill this empty space because it's not so big, but in most of cases, we have the need to fill this empty space to stabilize the blood clot or to provide for resorption. And in other cases, we have even to provide for some grafting in the soft tissue. So hard tissue, soft tissue, in 99% of cases of immediacy, we need to graft with something, I think. And sometimes we can use autologous materials. Sometimes we mix autologous materials with biomaterials. But some biomaterials, like bovine bone, for example, have some features that are more interesting in some of these applications.
Where do you see the advantage of using bovine bone, such as cerebone?
Yeah, as I saw before, when we extract one tooth, we leave the anatomy that we found when there was a tooth. But we all know that this anatomy will change dramatically after extraction and even, unfortunately, after implantation. After implant placement, we are not able to stop the resorption of bone, especially when bundle bone is thinner than 1 millimeter. So every time we have a bundle bone, we have to consider some resorption. And what happens if you have resorption? You can have a lack of osseointegration, but you can have more severely some aesthetic problem, because you can have recession, you can have a concavity instead of a convexity. And especially in anterior region, you can have a big failure by an aesthetic point of view. So bovine bone is normally the first choice when you want to have a shield that maintain the space, that maintain the shape of the socket, and you want to maintain the convexity and not to have a recession or a concavity. So normally, even if autologous bone is considered the gold standard, in this application, we prefer bovine bone instead of autologous bone, or we can use autologous bone in direct contact with the implant to have more vitality and more response, more biologic response, but the external site of grafting material is normally only bovine bone to give this shield effect.
So you mentioned the autologous bone with the positive biological properties. You talked a little bit about the bovine bone with the high volume stability, with the high, yeah. What about synthetic materials? Have you ever, or do you think that there are indications in immediacy where it would be indicated to use a synthetic material such as Max Resorb?
Yeah, I like a lot synthetic material. I don't know, because many dentists, they don't consider enough synthetic biomaterial. I think they have some characteristics that are exactly in between the bovine bone and the blood clot, simply the blood clot, no? In many cases, for example, if I do an immediate placement in a molar area that is not an aesthetic site, so I'm not so stressed about the volume maintenance, I want just to provide for a very natural growing of natural bone into the socket. So if the remaining space, the jumping distance is more than 1 millimeter, I normally prefer in posterior area to use synthetic biomaterial. I think they are very natural. The resorption is nice because it's not too fast, but it's not too slow. It goes away in long term. So if the feel of bone is quite spontaneous, like in mesiodistal empty spaces, like a mesial root or a distal root space, I'm not so stressed because we are not talking about bundle bone. So we simply want to stabilize the blood clot in a most safe way. Mm-hmm. So synthetic, I use a lot, especially in posterior areas.
Mm-hmm. So you like to use it in order to, let's say, take advantage of the natural remodeling properties, if I understand correctly. Yeah, great. So we've talked quite a lot now about the hard tissue aspect, about autologous bone, bovine bone, synthetic bone. What about soft tissue management or soft tissue grafting? Do you see the import, or do you see any necessity for that in immediacy?
Yeah, of course. As we all know, in the last years, I think probably in the last 10 years, soft tissue became more and more considered by all the clinicians, because they are responsible for a lot of medium and long-term success or unsuccess factors. If you have not the right soft tissue around your implant, it's like if your door is not good enough in the future, and all the problems can come from that door. Biological problems first, I think, are the most considered now, because in the past we were very interested in osseointegration, in hard tissue, and we thought that after osseointegration the world was fantastic, no? The world looks perfect after osseointegration. Then we understood that even after osseointegration, we can have a lot of problems. So if we have a biological complication that are quite common, around 8-9% of implants, per implantitis, we can have more frequently when the soft tissue is not ideal. The same we can say for aesthetic problems. When we work in aesthetic region, a different color, a different shape, a different thickness of the soft tissue is a sort of failure of the aesthetic result for the patient. Even if the implant is perfectly osseointegrated and the level of bone is good, so we are very stressed about the soft tissue. And when we talk about soft tissue grafting, normally the first idea is always to use connective tissue from the patient, because for sure is the gold standard. For sure is not, there's no possibility at the moment for most of biomaterial to have some characteristic of the connective tissue. But we have also some adverse aspects of connective tissue. For example, we cannot have in big dimension. Another problem is that some patients are old or with health problems, they have a lot of medicaments. So in some cases, we look for biomaterials. And in immediacy cases, I use a lot of porcine dermis matrix. For example, my daily use in these cases is simply for sealing the biomaterial under the abutment and after under the temporarization. I use a sort of disc of porcine dermis matrix fixed by the healing abutment or by the temporary that seal inside the biomaterials and the blood clot. I think in my daily practice, this is not scientifically based. This is what I see every day in my practice. I have a very good effect to close the blood clot with the biomaterials, excluding completely the contact from these biomaterials to the oral environment and to the temporization. So, yeah.
And in your daily practice, talking about soft tissue grafting, percentage-wise, more or less, how often do you use autologous soft tissue and how often would you go for a biomaterial such as Mucoderm?
I use connective tissue when I want to change the keratinization of the tissue or when I want to gain vertical volume. Mm? If I need verticality, there's no biomaterial in my hands that works so well like the connective tissue because I have no proliferation in the biomaterials. What is fantastic of connective tissue is the possibility to proliferate in time, up to 3 years. So if I need a vertical augmentation in a static region, for example, but even in posterior region, I simply go to connective tissue. No compromise are possible. The same when I want to change completely the keratinization of the tissue, but these two indications are probably 2% of my cases. They are not for all the cases. Only the most demanding cases need connective tissue. In 98% of cases, or 95, I prefer to use Mucoderm because I want just to increase the horizontal volume of the tissue. I don't need to change dramatically the keratinization. I want just to stabilize the soft tissue, increase a little the volume, and protect the grafting hard tissue material. This is my really daily indication for using in Mucoderm and immediacy. So I know that connected tissue have more advantages, but it's invasive. So I think it's an over-treatment to use in all cases. I prefer to use Mucoderm in most of cases.
So you always choose based on the indication on the patient, which makes total sense, yes.
But we cannot be too invasive with our patients because what is important nowadays is to provide for the best solution, trying to maintain the time of treatment, the cost of treatment, and the invasiveness as less as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about Mucoderm, if I remember correctly, you've also done some systematic research on that biomaterial, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the research is already finished. We hope to publish soon. What Straumann and Botis asked to our group was to test a possibility that was already tested in some cases to mix two fantastic biomaterials like Emdogain that is famous from many, many, many years and to use it with Mucoderm. And this combination was very, very interesting, in my opinion, because we had demonstration that Emdogain could stay in direct contact with this matrix and provide for the effect on the soft tissue. We tested in many cases in single implants in posterior area using tissue-level implants. And using a mixture of mdogaine and mucoderm together in a single slice. So it was not a big volume of biomaterial. What we wanted to check was the possibility to increase the thickness of the soft tissue and what can happen in time, because we could even imagine an immediate good result and a lack of volume in time. What we observed after 1 year was a very, very good result of gain in volume. In some cases, we also observed a gain in keratinization, but this was not in all the cases. What it was very good was the gain in volume. I think in all the cases we had, in some cases we had up to 7 millimeters of gain in volume, and this was very unexpected. We really we observed in all cases a good result, but in some cases it was very, very different and bigger. We have to analyze, to finish to analyze all this data, but I think this solution could be quite interesting when the case is a little bit more challenging, but we want still to use biomaterials instead of connective tissue from the patient.
That sounds like a very interesting study, and I mean, amazing results. 7 millimeters, that's really a very, very impressive gain. I mean, that's really a very impressive gain. From a biological point of view, do you always use mucoderm in combination with mdogaine? Do you always hydrate it in mdogaine?
No, because it's too expensive. No, I'm joking. I think playing with all these biomaterials, we understand that we have a lot of errors for our bone. No, we can start from simply the mucoderm to increase the volume. We cannot expect big changes in keratinization. We cannot expect vertical augmentation of the tissue, but we obtain more stability, more volume, more aesthetic, and more protection for biologic complication. Moving further, we can add to mdogaine to have a sort of booster of the result of the mucoderm. And if we need more, or if we need verticality, I would still consider the connective tissue. But I think customization is another key for our daily practice. We cannot use a single technique that solves all the problem. Like, we all know that we cannot use a single biomaterial for all the indication, no? I need bovine, I need autologous, I need a synthetic, I would need human, but in Italy we are not allowed to use. Anyway, I think it's nice to have many, many different solutions.
So, Massimo, so when it comes to mucoderm, in your clinical practice, do you also leave it exposed sometimes?
The indication is that this biomaterial can live partially exposed. How big can be this exposed part is not yet completely clear, because it's not only depending on the biomaterials, it's also depending from the patient, from the habits of the patient, and many local factors. So I would recommend not to expose intentionally the biomaterial, or to leave exposed really, really a little part of that. Saying that, I think helped me to introduce some tricks that I found working a lot with this biomaterial. I think we can improve the final outcome with the biomaterial with some little tricks. For example, as I told you before, you can obtain more easily volume than keratinization with this biomaterial, no? But we have other ways to obtain keratinization using biology of the soft tissue of the patient. For example, if I use a healing abutment on my implants. I use the Mucoderm Insight, and I leave intentionally a little part exposed of Mucoderm. How little? 1 millimeter, yeah, of Mucoderm exposed. I don't try to force the soft tissue to close in a primary intention closure because my implants is in the safe situation inside. We leave the Mucoderm a little exposed. On that part of exposure, we will gain keratinization for sure. It's the biology who had that. It's not Mucoderm. It's not related to Mucoderm. It's related to the biology that it closed with keratinized tissue. So, if I, in posterior area especially, if I use these little tricks, I obtain more volume and more keratinization using Mucoderm. But this is not related to the Mucoderm, it's related to the surgical technique. The same, for example, to improve the volume with Mucoderm, I bend it. I use a bigger part of Mucoderm and I bend it because my favorite characteristic of Mucoderm is probably the elastic memory of the biomaterial. So if I bend it and I insert it inside the tissue, we have this umbrella effect of opening under the tissue. And normally we have a gain in volume that is bigger than the quantity of Mucoderm that you used. This trick is very easy to do, and we have no problems if we have little exposure of the biomaterial, but I mean 1 millimeter, not 10 millimeters of exposure. We need a little exposure that the blood clot can solve easily in every patient. So not the primary closure in some cases when the implant is already osseointegrated with healing abutment. We improve the volume and we improve the keratinization.
So to summarize, in general, you recommend to cover it if it's possible, but in certain indications, you can leave it partially exposed with a good result.
For example, Jacek, I add something. I try to cover the Mucoderm, but if it get a little exposed, I'm not stressed. This is the reason I use, for example, Mucoderm also as a membrane that is not probably in the botis brochure, in the botis indication, but I like a lot, for example, if I have some difficulties, like after extraction, to close in primary intention the soft tissue and to keep it closed for sure. If I would use, for example, a cross-link membrane, it would be very stressing to me because if I have an accidental exposure of this membrane, can happen a big failure of the treatment. But if it happens the same little exposure on my Mucoderm used as a membrane with biomaterial below, I'm not stressed at all because I did many times and I had a complete healing of this little exposure and a success of the procedure.
But that's interesting because actually it's a question that is being asked quite often by clinicians, whether they can use Mucoderm as a barrier membrane. So talking from a company point of view, originally Mucoderm has been developed as a soft tissue graft, but as you mentioned, it does have a barrier effect also. So it can also be used as a barrier membrane, yeah. Okay, so yeah, Massimo, thank you very, very much for your time today, for having shared a lot of your experience, some of your tips and tricks. And yeah, thank you very much for having participated.
Thank you so much, Jacek. Also, always a pleasure.